Hey, everybody, I'm Chris Fafalius, and I'm the producer of Krista Makes a Podcast and the host of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
And I'm Matt Kelly, host of Horror Movie Night and the producer slash the head of content for the Geekscape Podcasting Network.
Between the two of us, we have, believe it or not, 25 years of podcasting experience, and we want to help you start your own podcast.
We know podcasting, and we want to share that knowledge with you.
So whether you're new to podcasting or you want some feedback on your currently active podcast, we want to help.
Or perhaps you're just overwhelmed with all of the editing work. Well, we can help you with that also.
You can check out our website at weknowpodcasting.com for more information.
We're excited to help your podcasting dreams become a reality. Of Horror Movie Night. This week we're talking about a movie that I picked, but it might as well have just been a Kelly brother pick, because we're talking John Waters with Serial Mom. Probably one of maybe two John Waters films that fall close enough to a horror movie for it to be an actual Horror Movie Night pick. The rest of his movies can be horrific, but they are not horror necessarily. Scott, was this your first watch of Serial Mom?
Yeah, I only knew it from the VHS cover.
I remember, and I'm not sure if Brian remembers this, I didn't see this movie until college, but I had wanted to see it for a really long time because I remember seeing the ad on pay-per-view all the time. And I was just like, what is this? Like, John Waters had so many movies that I remember seeing posters for or seeing advertisements for and just being like, what is this movie? But it wasn't until college that I ever actually watched any of his films.
I don't even know what my first John Waters movie was.
Pink Flamingos.
Yeah, I made Brian watch Pink Flamingos.
I still haven't watched it.
I think my first one was actually Pecker. And I only watched it because it's starring Christina Ricci. And I was like, hell yeah. And then I bought it and I was like, this is a weird fucking movie.
I always forget that that's him because I didn't even know who John Waters was. I mean, I knew the mustache, you know, the pencil stash.
I have so many quotes written down for this movie. Just that opening scene, the opening breakfast scene, like the dialogue between Ricky Lake and Matthew Lillard. Matthew Lillard at this point, everyone's like their peak level of wholesomeness. Where she's just like, do you think I could get 50 cents for the village people? And he's like, you could even get a buck. Like, it's all so dumb.
I think what I love about this movie is where it's unique from other like dark comedies is just the fact that like this is the one like serial killer movie where first murder, everyone's pretty sure it's her. And then by the second murder, it's not like a mystery. Like everyone is fully aware that she is this serial killer, but it's like due to technicalities, they can't arrest her yet.
So the one thing that I read when I was doing some of the research on like the critical reviews of this movie, this is kind of like a middle reviewed John Waters movie. Like people were like, it's not as crazy as his past stuff, but it's not like his worst movie. But the biggest complaint that people had was actually with Kathleen Turner, that they felt that she like wasn't playing it up campy enough, whereas everybody else was like fully embracing the camp. I didn't see that when I thought that she was perfectly fine. But apparently the first choice that John Waters had, the person he wanted to play Bev was Julia Andrews.
No, I thought Susan Sarandon was supposed to be it.
No, they offered it to Susan Sarandon after Julia
fucking
Andrews.
Yeah,
could you imagine Julia Andrews doing the prank phone calls and stuff?
I can, because I have a great imagination. And, you know, I wish you wouldn't have told me that, because, like, I thought Kathleen Turner was great in it, but it also is kind of funny that she's playing it a little bit straight while everybody else is kind of embracing the camp like you were talking about. But I don't know. She plays it so straight, and then she gets like
insane in the last like 30 minutes.
You know,
yeah.
Every murder.
She improvised. John Waters apparently didn't even notice it
Yeah.
Until it was in a screening. She improvised the scene where she just stops to wave at a family real quick and then continues chasing people.
It's her family. It's when they're at the stop sign and she's chasing his friend. It's like when you see feet in an action movie and you're like, oh, Quentin Tarantino did this. It's like if somebody masturbates like a caricature of a human would masturbate, dude, I know I'm watching a John Waters movie.
Dude, between the masturbation scene and when she's having sex with her husband and they are like flying off the bed. Well, and that's the thing is, like, I think I have no evidence of this, but like John Waters, you never really hear about like John Waters' boyfriends or anything like that. I think that John Waters is a very asexual human being. And the more I watch his movies, the more I'm like, oh, yeah, he just thinks the even the concept of sex is ridiculous. Like,
I mean, yeah. It like, is.
Like, he just mocks it so hard. I also love, this is, like, one of those things where it captures, Brian, you were talking about this in our chat, like, it captures all of the essence of, like, what you can expect in a John Waters movie. And, like, his satire on, like, the 50s stereotype of a family is so good. And they get it right away in the very beginning when the police show up and they hand the ransom note and she goes, I never say the P word. And her husband goes, no woman ever would. Like, it's just so over the top. It's so ridiculous. But I do have a couple quotes that I wrote down that I wanted to give to Scott specifically.
Because you want me to put it in my next?
Yeah, for your next album.
Yeah.
So I got a few here. There's his unhealthy obsession with sick horror movies.
Yep, I wrote that one down.
Tell me, did he torture animals as a child? Was another one I wrote down.
Yeah, well, if he did, then he probably is a Republican senator.
And then it was gore. Hang in there like a ruddy nose.
Like a bloody nose is what I think it's bloody nose. But yeah, it was pretty fucking great. So I have like a really weird, like most of my notes are just me not understanding if these references were cultural or in jokes because John Waters knew these people. But like the talking peewee doll that Ricky Lake has, I believe the mom says, that guy's a weirdo. Or maybe Matthew Lillard says it.
So let me tell you how deep shit goes in this movie. There is a Christmas card in this movie that they never draw attention to, but it's an original John Wayne Gacy. There we go. Oh my God. It's an original John Wayne Gacy drawing that was sent to one of John Waters' childhood friends when he wrote a letter to John Wayne Gacy. And they were just like, well, we're making a movie about serial killers. Might as well just put it in the background somewhere. So like, that's like little Easter eggs of just references that he has buried in here.
That's so, I mean, it's just weird. And like, I just read a note and it took me a minute to process it. And I was like, is this a quote or not? Because I thought it was. But actually, the note is, I have happily never heard my parents fuck. Which really, I think that is the mark of true suburbia is never having heard your parents fuck. So, I mean, yeah, I didn't grow up in suburbia, but I feel like I had that suburban 80s, 90s, exactly what you think about white bread America kind of upbringing. I mean, obviously my mom wasn't a serial killer, so yeah. That's probably because I didn't hear my parents have sex. So there you go.
I mean, even like the casting in this is very pure John Waters. Like, you've got the regulars, you got Mink Stole popping in there as Dottie, but then like Carl's date is Tracy Lords, the jeweler that she kills at the end.
If I got stood up by Tracy Lords, I just accept it, you know, like,
yeah,
I'd be okay with it because Tracy Lords in the early 90s, just chef's kiss.
Perfect. And then Patty Hearst plays the juror that Beverly kills at the end
the final
of the movie.
Yeah. Victim, yeah. Yeah. Like, but we just also get that Suzanne Summers reference or cameo. And I don't understand that cameo either.
I just don't. I love how enamored everybody is by her. Like, she walks in.
The judge stops and stares.
Apparently, they spent a shit ton of money to get the rights to the song Tomorrow to be in this movie from Annie, because like the producers did not like John Waters and they kept raising the price and he kept being like, whatever you want, I'm paying for it because I want this scene to happen this way.
And it wasn't as expensive as I thought. Like, it was very expensive, but it was only $60,000. Like, if you think about it, but still.
But that's a fuck ton of money.
For like a John Waters budget too, like.
What was this, 1992? Holy yeah. Fuck, that's a lot of money. That's at least 100 grand now, right?
Probably, yeah. But that's some shit that I would do. Like obviously if I had the funding, because I love that scene. And it's like one of those things where it's like, hey, they want a lot of money, we shouldn't spend it. It's like, no, I have this vision of someone getting beat to death with a piece of meat. To Annie, and it has to be Annie.
She has a whole roast leg to cut a tiny slice for her sandwich.
Like, oh, and guys, I gotta tell you a quick story that just reminded me of. The first summer that we had Roan, you know, our first dog, we've had him for a long time. I had never had an indoor dog, you know, grew up with, you know, like farm dogs and such. But Roan, it was the first summer we had him. So we'd had him for, I don't know, like 8 months at this point. And Megan and I were like, let's drive an hour and a half to this Renaissance fair. Because neither of us had ever been to a Ren Fest. It was outside and nice weather, blah, blah. And so we're like, we'll take the dog. And so we take Roan. And this was also, you know, like 11 years ago. So I obviously was still eating meat. And I was like, well, you know, I'm here. I want to get one of those absurdly large, I think they're turkey, maybe they're ham. I don't know. It doesn't matter. It's been a long time. But like Roan was spit all over his face, like his beard was completely soaked because he just wanted some. And I was like, okay, buddy. And so I like pulled off a little slice of it and I had it between my teeth, you know, and I was like, okay, Ron, come get it. And he bit the fuck out of my lip, like so bad. And so anytime I look at those, I have two thoughts now. One thought was always medieval times, which I've never been to, but I've seen in, you know, The Cable Guy. But now I'm going to think of Serial Mom getting beaten to death with that, which, I mean, I'd much prefer to just have my lip bitten by my dog.
So one of the lines that has stuck out in this movie for a really long time for me, and it's not even like a necessarily funny line, it's probably like the most dramatically delivered line in the whole movie, but it's after the woman gets beat with the leg and Matthew Lillard's girlfriend is just like, I saw the blood and it was brown. It wasn't red like in the movies. It's not like the gore movies at all. Like, I quote the Don Knotts line constantly for some
reason.
What's
the Don Knotts line?
It's when they're at the swap meet and it just cuts to a guy buying a picture of Don Knotts that's like made out of jelly beans. And he just goes, I can't believe it. Fucking Don Knotts. And then his girlfriend just goes, he's the coolest.
Like, here's the thing about John Waters. I feel like so much of his humor is anti-humor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
You know, and that's why I think it's definitely an acquired taste, right?
Oh, for sure. I mean, that's why I don't think he's ever... The most mainstream he ever got was, like, Hairspray, and that was also the most, like, subdued he ever has been.
Well, and, you know, I'm going to say the thing that everybody hates me to say, but, you know, I like the remake of Hairspray better than the original just because there's more music in it.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. I like the original because it's all of these, like, obscure 50s and 60s songs that I never would have known had I not seen that movie.
Yeah.
I like the original more because of John Waters.
Oh, God. His little cameo is
as the psychiatrist.
So can we talk about John Waters' cameo in this movie, which might be my favorite John Waters cameo, as the voice of Ted Bundy on the cassette tape?
Oh, my God. That was him?
Yeah. Beverly, it's me, Ted Bundy. It's lonely on death row.
Now that would be great to start a ska song, you know? Like,
yes. One of the other lines, the thing that I love about this movie specifically is like, how complacent, it's almost like people know that Beverly is a serial killer before it's revealed. Because there's that scene with the recycling guys.
Where they're like, they're just like, for the sake of this planet, somebody just might kill the neighbor.
He goes, someone ought to kill her. Give her a happy face and then recycle her. And I was like, can you imagine having that conversation with like your trash man?
So here's the thing is that you're forgetting, like, I'm so shocked that we're over 15 minutes into discussing this movie and you haven't said what I think is the most notable line in this film, which is, Dottie, at least you could apologize. I collect Franklin Mint. I think that's such a I think that's the only joke that I laughed out loud for this movie. Everything else was I was just kind of like, you know.
That's kind of the John Waters reaction sometimes, huh? One of the parts that made me laugh so hard is when the guy finds Carl's body in the bathroom, and it's like this big burly guy, and he walks in holding a shish kebab.
Oh yeah, he has the weirdest scream effect.
It's called a Howie scream. I had to look it up.
Howie scream. I know the Wilhelm scream, but I do not know the Howie scream.
There's the Howie scream. The Wilhelm scream, I think, was someone getting eaten by an alligator.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know what the Howie scream was originally. I think the movie moves quickly. There was a point where I did a time check. And I was like, oh, wow, we're like in the 20 minutes left range. And I feel like I've only been watching for 20 minutes. Like John Waters, and I've said his quote before, but he's always said, like, if you can't do your movie under 90 minutes, you shouldn't be doing your movie at all. And like his movie's a prime example of his skill of just like, yo, you get in, you tell the story, you get the fuck out. Because we said the same thing about Crybaby. Like the first hour of Crybaby flies by.
Yeah.
Brian's like all morose. He's like, yeah, well, first hour of Crybaby flies by. I wish it was like much longer because, you know, I need my waters fix.
I just have to get rid of my Crybaby tin. So,
no.
Yeah.
No.
Why? Are you using it again? Okay, cut that, Matt.
Just... no, don't cut that. Because I am. No, just we're downsizing. A bunch of shit. We're getting rid of all, like, most of my trinkets. Any gifts, like, I had to put my foot down. Like, this is a gift from someone. Like, my little Beetlejuice plush I got from Scott. But, like, in order to salvage all my gifts. Yeah. No, in order to salvage all my gifts, I had to get rid of the shit that I bought on my own.
So, there's a few other things that I want to make a reference to. And they're all within the same, like, 5-minute period. And we're going to talk about the cops coming to arrest Bev at church up until she sneaks out to kill the woman watching Annie. Because first and foremost, holy shit, that snot hitting the baby's forehead got such a reaction out of me. But then there's the whole sequence where she's hiding in the back and the lady comes in to rent Annie. And there's all this weird dialogue where he's just like, oh, are you here to return Ghost Dad? She's like, I just love those Bill Cosby movies. And then he charges her for not rewinding, and she goes, keep the change, you son of a psycho, as she, like, walks out. And then he goes, must be the influence of all those family films, right, Mom? And that's when he realizes that she left. But, like, there's, like, 4 quotes right there for your album, Scott. You could do a whole album of just quotes from Serial Mom.
No, I don't think I could. I can't believe that you're... the stuff that you're sticking on is so funny to me because the stuff that I'm sticking on is almost like the polar opposite. And it's also probably because it's my first watch. But John Waters, the asexual director, really went ahead and named the fake band Camel Lips. The all-female...
Yeah. It was L7.
Oh, that was L7?
Yeah.
Okay, that's fantastic. That actually makes it better. And then Hatchetface is the stage diver. It's funny because she's in there for just a split second. It's like, you know, literally a half second where you just see the stage dive. And I saw that platinum hair and I was like, I bet you anything that's fucking Hatchetface. And I looked it up and it was her. And I felt so good about myself because I'm like not a John Waters aficionado by any sort of gauge. You know, I've seen Crybaby 3 times in my life and that's it. I've seen Hairspray like 3/4 of 1 time. So for me to be like, you know, like it's big, you know?
Yeah, there's certain things that he does in his, every one of his movies has like 1 or 2 things where I'm like, oh, that's so uncomfortable. And I think, not that the band's named Camel Lips, but the close-ups of all of
their camel toes. Yes.
Yeah, like you're just like, oh, intense. God.
And the fact that it's L7 makes it so much funnier to me because, like, they literally knew what was going on and they were like, this is punk rock, so let's do it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, and I don't mean punk rock the music. I mean punk rock the aesthetic. Like, they were like, well, this will piss some people off. This will piss off conservatives. Let's do it.
Yeah, like I just had this conversation the other day. Playing punk music is not part of the punk aesthetic. Like there is a thing where it's like it's about the attitude and the aesthetic way more than anything else. And like I think John Waters, just his whole attitude is like that punk rock aesthetic because it is like it's this. He is the movie equivalent of like a band like Pansy Division. And I think he does that with weirdness. You know what I mean? Like he's just like, this is going to be shocking and it's going to offend people, but it's also going to like make people uncomfortable. And the people who are uncomfortable fucking should be uncomfortable. It's like, I love that attitude. And then like, just like crazy shit, like casting Patty Hearst, like he'll just be like, oh, you were kidnapped and like part of a weird cult. I want you to be in my movie.
And I spent a I spent a good 15 minutes on reading through Patty Hearst's Wikipedia and what happened. And I was like, Jesus Christ, like, what did he promise her to be in this fucking movie as this character, you know?
All I remember is that there was something that happened on the set of Crybaby where basically, like, she was afraid of about going to jail, and then the entire cast and crew shared their getting arrested stories.
Yeah.
Because everybody that works with John Waters has, like, done jail time for, like, stupid stuff. Like, John Waters in the 70s got arrested so many times for, like, obscenity stuff.
Well, that was the goal for Plink Flamingos, right?
Yeah.
Because he was friends with the guy who made Deep Throat.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And he was like, we want to make something more shocking than Deep Throat because you're going to jail for Deep Throat. So let's, like, push the boundaries to, to where it's not even pornographic anymore. It's just disturbing.
You guys are never going to get me to watch that movie. I just hope you know.
Like, I love John Waters, so I'll watch all of his movies. And there's a certain respect to it. But, like, anyone that's like, oh, his best movie's Pink Flamingos or Multiple Maniacs are, like, the same people that are like, Sublime's best album is Robin the Hood. And it's like, you know, it's not. But, like, you just want to go with, like, their originals. Like, his movies aren't even really entertaining. They're just fucking weird until they get to, like, the Pecker, the fucking...
I would say, like, Polyester's where it really... Like, I think Polyester was the first film... Because it was the first film that actually got a legitimate rating from the MPAA.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as it sucks, when he lost Divine, he became less reliant on Divine, and his films got better because of it. Although I do think that Divine is, like, sorely missed. Like... The presence of Divine, I could see Divine literally playing Serial Mom. Like, if Divine was still alive, he would have Divine playing Beverly for sure.
Absolutely. And it's funny how, like, he started, I don't want to say he got, like, mainstream because he never really did, but, like, his movie started to get a little bit more tame. And then he just comes out of nowhere with a Dirty Shame that is just, like, full-on overdose of John Waters being John Waters. Just, like, insane.
One of my favorite things about him is that he always tries to find the weirdest spot to put written and directed by John Waters. So on this one, it was over top of a smushed fly.
Yes, I think I noticed that on this watch.
I think in Pecker, it's like a shot of two rats fucking in a trash can, and it says written by John, written and directed by John Waters.
Is Pecker, like, he's the always one where, like, his little sister's obsessed with sugar?
Yes.
Narcoleptic, that, or she sleepwalks.
Yeah.
I watched half of that movie. Yeah.
Yeah. It's got its moments. So that was Serial Mom. I'm a big fan. Brian, big fan. Scott seemed to enjoy it enough.
Oh, yeah. I'm not mad about it. You know, it's not like half of the shit Brian picks.
Yeah. So let's talk double features. And I know that this is my pick, so I get to go first. I mean, this is no shocker. This is one of my all-time favorite movies. But just the tone, specifically around the point with the guy with the shish kebab, I was like, this movie tonally reminds me a lot of Freaked. So I think my double feature would actually be Freaked.
Can you put that much of your favorite into one evening? Because, like, literally, that's...
You don't know me at all, Scott.
That's like a death row kind of thing. Like, I'm going to die tomorrow. I'm going to watch fucking
Serial Mom
and Freaked.
And I'm going to eat a pizza.
An entire one by myself.
Chick-fil-A.
Can I have a pizza with McDonald's French fries, please? All right, Brian, since you are the other person who possibly could have picked Serial Mom, what is your double feature with Serial Mom?
I'm gonna keep it a John Waters night, and my personal favorite, I would really pair it with Cecil B. DeMented. I fucking love that movie so much.
And Cecil B. DeMented is the only other one that I could even kind of quantify as a horror.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be mad if we discussed that one. I've watched that whole movie. I've seen more John Waters than I remember.
He's got a shockingly light filmography.
Like, yeah.
For how long he's been around and how influential he's been and how praised he is. Like, he had a bunch of movies in a row in, like, the 70s. Then he did Polyester in 1980. And then his next movie wasn't until Hairspray in 1988.
Wow, Hairspray was 88?
Yeah, and then, like, Crybaby was, like, 91. And then he had, like, a brief run in the 90s. And then he did Dirty Shame in 2004, and he hasn't done a movie since. Scott, what is your double feature with Serial Mom?
Well, before I do that, I have IMDb up, and pretty shocked at who is in Cecil B. DeMented, because I mean, I remember Melanie Griffith being in it. You said something to the effect of it's amazing how many people that were in it before they were famous. And I'm thinking, like, okay, this movie was 2000. So Melanie Griffith was actually either at the very top of her stardom, or like I think that she was on the downward slope. I mean, I know it was a weird way to get her in it, but Stephen Dorff,
mm-hmm.
Alicia Witt, Adrian Grenier, mm-hmm. Maggie Gyllenhaal, Michael Shannon, and I remember Kevin Nealon being in it.
Yeah, he played Forrest Gump.
There are a lot of big names in it, and so I guess Adrian Grenier, like, that makes sense, but Alicia Witt, she had already done Urban Legend at the time, I believe.
Yeah.
I mean, like, this is a pretty star-studded cast. Maggie Gyllenhaal, I can see it being a little early on in her career, but like...
I felt like Michael Shannon, I haven't seen in a comedy, aside from Cecil B. DeMente.
Oh, he was in Knives Out. Okay.
Yeah, like, and I'm not saying they weren't working. It's just like, I feel like, especially Adrian Greer and Michael Shannon, like, they really skyrocketed it. Like, I feel like Michael Shannon started to get really big after he was in Boardwalk Empire. And then he was in that Alien movie. He was in the Iceman movie. He plays like a lot of really straight roles.
His biggest thing before Cecil B. DeMente was he had a small part in Groundhog's Day, and he was on the show Early Edition.
Yeah.
Oh, he was Zod. He was Zod in Batman vs. Superman. That's fucking crazy pants.
All right, so... Scott, double feature.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sorry. Romancing the Stone.
Ooh.
You know, I'm not going to double feature a John Waters movie with a John Waters movie. I just, my sanity can't handle it. But, you know, I actually really like Romancing the Stone. Megan and I watched it over the winter time, I want to say. It's just a good fucking time.
Question, and I think I'm wrong. Is that a Steven Spielberg movie?
No.
The only reason I thought it might be is because it's... it is a Steven Spielberg artwork.
Well,
like the Goonies.
The whole point is to make that joke. Because
that's all I really remember from it. It's like them swinging from the rope in that cartoonish style.
But I mean, I bet that if we went down and in and looked for who made that poster, probably the exact same person.
Yeah,
that did all the Indiana Jones, and those are the best. Those are the absolute best posters of all time, in my opinion. Is like the painted fantasy action ones from the 80s.
For sure.
All right, so things that you watched this week that you want to talk about. I got to give credit to a new friend of mine, thanks to One Hit Thunder and his movie, The Last Blockbuster, that is currently playing on Netflix. It is a ridiculous documentary about the last blockbuster in Bend, Oregon, and how they have managed to survive years after the franchise collapsed. Just filled with like great guests throughout the doc. I mean, you're getting interviews with like Brian Posehn, Kevin Smith, Doug Benson, just a ton of comedians sitting there talking about their experiences. Jamie Kennedy shares an incredible story about how Blockbuster's what started his career. So I was like, that's crazy. Like his story, and like the director told us later, he was like, I didn't know that story. But yeah, it's really funny. It's really just it's good, wholesome time. So highly recommend The Last Blockbuster on Netflix.
Cool.
I'll give you guys a twofer here, and they'll both be really quick. So speaking of Danny DeVito, because of Romancing the Stone, we were on a kick where we were watching just some, it was kind of like, you know, on Prime or Hulu or whatever streaming service it was, we were kind of like, movies like this, blah, blah, blah. And Megan was like, oh, Living Out Loud. I think it was 1992 or something like that. And it was bad. It was so fucking bad, and it was like a drama, and she knows I hate dramas, and no fault of her own, because I guess that her mom loved it when she was growing up, so her mom loved it when Megan was growing up, so she hadn't seen it in something like, you know, 20 some years, and she was like, oh, I remember this being funny, let's watch it. Holy shit, it was painful. It was probably the most painful movie watching experience I've had in a long time, because she kept on going, I'm so sorry, I swear it gets funny, and it never got funny.
I never even heard of this.
It's like, real bad. But the reason why we got to it is because I told Megan, I've never actually watched the entirety of Pretty Woman, and she was like, what? And so she puts on Pretty Woman, and that movie is an absolute delight. And the connections to the Princess Diaries are insane. Do you know about these? Half the same actors are in it. Wait. Wasn't Kathleen Turner and Peggy Sue Got Married?
Yes.
We watched that a couple weeks ago, too. That movie's fucking ridiculous. And not that great.
Yeah, probably one of my least favorite John Hughes movies. It does not
feel
like
a John
Hughes
movie. I had no fucking clue.
Yeah, it does not feel like any.
And Nick Cage is, Jesus Christ. So bad in it.
Not the best John Hughes, not the best Nick Cage. Not a good one.
It's no Wicker Man 2005 or whatever it is, guys.
No. All right, Brian, What have you watched?
So I watched one episode of two things. I was in Georgia staying with my boss this week, and him and his wife watched the worst type of television. So first I watched an episode of, I don't remember what it's called, Trust Issues Island or something. Fuck, Temptation Island. Temptation Island.
I think you found a better name for that show.
That's basically what this show is. So it's 12 couples. And then you just like take all the girlfriends, you cut it in half, six and six. You take all the girlfriends and you put them on this island. And then you put all the boyfriends on this island. And then you take the other two couples and reverse it. And then just see who cheats on who. And that's really the show. But it was bothering me so much because I'm like really at this point where I don't know. And the answer could be both, but it's like, everyone's aware that reality shows are like a social experiment. So I genuinely don't know, is like, do the worst type of people go on reality TV? Or is it just that they're set up to guarantee that they're going to bring out the worst in everybody?
There's so much alcohol involved. Yeah. I think mostly alcohol fueled.
Yeah.
This is the thing I know. So Netflix did that Love is Blind show, right? The experiment started with 100 people. By the end of the week that they were in their isolation chamber, 10 people decided to be couples, but they only followed 4 of them because they said that the other 6 people were too compatible with each other.
Gotcha.
So they actively were like, let's follow the 4 people that are just absolutely toxic for each other because that's going to give us what we want.
So that's what people want.
It starts as a social experiment for sure. And then they absolutely take the information from that social experiment that they need to get ratings.
Yeah.
But that's what's so wrong is that like the what you need for ratings is people being absolute horrible trash humans.
I hope that over the next couple of years, because you know something like a Ted Lasso, like there's so much stuff where it's like, no, people want like wholesome, stress-free entertainment as
I
well.
I hope so. I mean, and like Great British Bake Off, you know, like I don't understand people that get off from watching people be shitty and yell at each other, because I'm like, what is your life actually like? There's not an indictment here. I truly don't fucking understand what your life is like if it doesn't make you like physically ill to watch people argue. And that maybe is just my anxiety. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the second thing I watched was I watched the most recent episode of Riverdale.
Why?
I haven't watched any of Riverdale. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? So they gave me a rundown.
I want to pause you for just 1 second. Kathleen is going to do an episode that's just called What the Fuck is Happening in Riverdale, which she tries to explain. She goes, this season is so off the rails because I think they did like a 9-year jump forward in time or something.
What? Yeah, because they had to. They're like, you guys are clearly 30. You know, like, so I guess in a previous season there was a serial killer, the trash bag killer TBK. There's a cult involved, and everyone's banging everyone. I only saw one episode, so I can't say for sure, but I'm starting to get the idea that the writers are fake woke, because it's like, hey, here's this gay couple, here's these two gay men. Watch them kiss on the lips, then it fades to black, and you can get the assumption that they're gay. Okay, now there's these two gay women. All right, let's slow it down. All right, blow on her nipples. You know, yeah, really caress her hair. You know, so it's like, hyper-focus on that. But the whole reason I brought it up before you go is just I really want HMN to do a show exactly like Riverdale. And I'm like, what is the perfect comic to take this idea and do it with? And I think it's going to be Dilbert. I think that we should do a really dark teeny bop Dilbert.
The problem with that is that the guy who does Dilbert is like an alt-right fanatic.
Yeah,
so
we gotta give money to Scott Adams for that. You know what? Fuck it. I'll do a teeny bopper Garfield.
That's what I was
thinking. Oh, you've been like, waiting for that.
But the thing was, we would have to just make it like Archie. Like Garfield is just a red-haired kid. And then his brother is just a blonde-haired kid. I will say my first idea was Calvin and Hobbes. And it's like, all right, it's this dark thing. And then, like, the kid's, like, tiger is, like, a legitimate tiger. And, like, he like, kills his enemies. And I'm like, this is actually getting too badass of a show. I would actually watch the show. I need something. I need something I can mock.
Having not watched any of Riverdale, but hearing a lot of people say that the first season was not terrible and then it really went off the rails.
It was the first season was hard, dude. Like, yeah, Megan and I slogged through it. The first two episodes are fun.
I have a feeling that they didn't expect to be going this long. Yeah. Like, I think that this was
like Supernatural.
We have an idea
for every CW show. Literally every show on the CW, they get, like, they're like, okay, well, I think we can make it through 3/4 of a season. And if we don't get, like, canceled by that break, then we'll figure out how to end the season. And then each time they're like, fuck, 14-year-olds love this shit. And so Arrow is at, like, 10 seasons. Supernatural will quit at 15. Or
dude, it's ridiculous. All right, well, speaking of ridiculous, we just talked about John Waters, Serial Mom. And if you hop over to our Patreon at patreon.com/HMMPodcast, you'll hear us talking about Matthew Lillard, probably the person we talked about the least in this Serial Mom episode. So stay tuned for that.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.